Chapter 20 Han and Leia snuggled together on the couch, sitting in the darkness, wordlessly watching the galaxy rotate outside beyond the viewport. The door to the passageway hissed open behind them, spilling light into the large room. Han and Leia turned to look. Four armored figures marched in, quiet and confident. Apparently not noticing the Solos on the couch, they walked straight to the doorway leading to the main bedchamber. The one with the largest weapon, a shoulder-mounted blaster rig, set up to destroy the door, while the other three readied their own weapons. Han and Leia exchanged a puzzled look. Leia shrugged. Han drew his blaster. He'd spent frustrating hours not permitted by the various security staffs to carry his favorite weapon, so he had recovered it the instant he'd returned to his own quarters. Now he aimed it at the four intruders, bracing it against the top of the couch. "Hey," he said. The four turned. One, fastest on the uptake, began to aim more quickly than the others. Han shot him in the throat. Leia sprang up from the couch, a force-assisted leap that carried her toward the ceiling of the tall living chamber. She lit her lightsaber on the way up. One of the intruders, the one carrying the shoulder-mounted blaster, aimed at her. Han, not knowing whether her skills and lightsaber could deflect the blast from such a weapon, shot him too, his blaster bolt burning its way into the side of the man's helmet. The other two fired at him. The first shot hit the back of the sturdy couch and picked the furniture up, spinning it toward the outer wall. Han and the couch hit the transparasteel of the viewport. Han felt the viewport shudder under the impact, and he wondered, for one eternity-long fraction of a second, if it would give way beneath the blow, buckling free of its housing, sending him into the coldness of space and decompression. It didn't. It rang metallically as he hit it. Pain shot through his shoulder blades, and suddenly he was on the floor, the couch on top of him. He heard Leia's lightsaber hum and sizzle. He rolled out from under the furniture. In the moment it took him to come upright, blaster in hand, the situation was resolved. One of the two remaining attackers was down with his head off. The other, shaking in pain, was missing both arms at the elbow. Both of Han's targets were down, smoke rising from where the blaster bolts had hit them. Leia turned her attention to the door, and Han didn't need Jedi powers to know what she was thinking. "Yeah," he said. "You left, me right." They emerged into Calabarth Way at a dead run, Han turning toward the chambers of the Corellian delegation, Leia turning toward the delegation from Coruscant. The first door Han passed slid open, and a man leapt out. Han aimed, wrenched his blaster back out of line. The man emerging was his own son. "Come on, kid," he said, and ran past. Han could see up ahead that the double-wide door leading into the Corellian delegation suite was open. Small arms blaster fire emerged from the doorway to pockmark the passageway wall opposite. As he watched, a black armored figure staggered back through the doorway, his chest smoking from what looked like blaster hits, and swung his oversized blaster rifle into line back toward the doorway. The blaster fired. A lance of red light leapt from the weapon, and the interior of the chamber beyond the door was suddenly illuminated in flame colors. Han fired. His shot hit the attacker's armor just under the armpit, staggering him, but not penetrating. At the same moment, Jason hurled his lightsaber. It spun in flight, catching the attacker as he was still off balance from Han's shot, crossing him at knee level and severing both legs at the joint. Jason put on a burst of force-augmented speed, leaving his father behind, and kept the lightsaber spinning in the air just outside the suite's door. There were more flashes of light from that chamber, more small arms fire, and he took the last two steps with a sinking feeling. He snatched the hilt of his spinning lightsaber out of the air and stepped into the doorway. The room was on fire. No, that wasn't quite right. Three members of the Corellian security detail were on fire, their bodies burning briskly, smoke also curling up from their blasters. Oddly, the chamber's fire alert had not activated. There were three bodies on the ground that weren't smoking. They were black-clad intruders. The burn marks on their heads attested to the accurate fire of the dead Corsac officers. One of the interior doors was gone, wrenched free, the frames scorched by the power of the intruders' blaster rifles. In the doorway stood Wedge Antilles, dressed in his shorts and ancient Rebel Alliance shirt, a blaster in his hand. He looked Jason in the eye and shook his head, a sorrowful gesture. Jason entered and moved past Wedge. On the floor of the sumptuous bedchamber beyond lay Five-World Prime Minister Idle Saxon, a burned-edge hole the size of a dinner plate passing entirely through her torso, residual charring masking any expression she might have been wearing when she died. Leia sped faster as she neared the door to the main Coruscant delegation quarters. Those doors were open, and she could hear blaster fire from beyond them. As she reached the doorway, she dropped the speed burst and stopped with the abruptness of a Toydarian junk merchant flying over a credit. The chamber beyond, an antechamber providing access to a variety of bedchambers and function rooms, was filled with smoke and bodies. Three of the downed combatants were black-armored intruders. Several were GA security. One, on the far side of the room, sitting half upright, was an elderly man in an admiral's uniform. His head, neck, and the top portion of his chest were missing, the edges of what remained blackened by high energy. A huge hole in the wall above, centered at the 2-meter level, showed where the upper reaches of his body had been when the blast had hit. Nearer, a fourth black-armored intruder was sprawled on the floor, his blaster rifle a meter beyond his reach. He struggled to rise, but another GA-uniformed officer straddled his body, gripping his helmet by the faceplate. As the intruder continued to struggle, the officer brought a small blaster pistol up to the back of his neck and fired down through the spine. The attacker jerked and lay still. The officer became aware that someone was standing behind him. He spun and aimed, and as he turned, Leia recognized him as Tycho Selchu. The old pilot's friend or foe recognition was still incredibly quick. He brought his aim off Leia, even as she raised her blade to deflect a possible shot. Leia looked past him to the body against the wall.
"Oh, no," she said. "Not Pelion."
Tycho shook his head. "Not Pelion. My double." The voice came from a shadowy doorway. Its door was opened, not destroyed. From it stepped the old admiral, dressed in a dark robe, a blaster rifle in his hands. He looked sorrowful as he gazed at the man who had died in his stead. Even his bristly mustache seemed to droop. Tycho asked, "Is Han—"
"He's fine," Leia said. "Han shot first."
There was no more blaster fire to be heard. The loudest noises were the hum of Leia's lightsaber and the crackling of flames from some of the bodies. Leia switched her weapon off, and it was even quieter.
"Let's find out how bad the damage is," she said.
"He looked at me," Luke said, "foamed at the mouth, and fell dead."
"The one Jason crippled did the same thing," Wedge said.
"I saw foam on the lips of several of them," Pelion added.
They were crowded into a lounge near the Solo suite, representatives of both diplomatic parties, all the Jedi, and a few of Toriaz Station's security officers. One of them, Lieutenant Yorvin, a reed-thin woman with hair a rustier red than Mara's, decided to straighten things out.
"We need to start taking statements immediately," she said. "As soon as we can set up our truth analyzers, I'll be requesting a judge to come up from Kuat to help with the officiating. My Lord Solo," she gestured at Han, "I'll need you to surrender your blaster. You're in the company of the envoys again."
Han gave her a look that was half scowl, half puzzlement.
"I'm not sure how to respond to a statement like that,"
he said, except with violence.
Lieutenant Yorvin suddenly discovered herself flanked by Wedge Antilles and Tycho Selchew.
You seem to be asking to suck space, Wedge said.
I'm sorry?
Perhaps the term isn't common in the Kuod flavor of basic, Tycho said. What he's asking, Lieutenant, is whether you'd like to patch the station exterior without wearing an enviro suit.
I don't... I'm not...
Shh, Wedge said. Listen. Yes, an investigation is about to happen, but you're not in charge. We are. Here are your orders.
First,
Tycho said, shut up. Second, lock down this entire habitat. Seal off the connection to Toriaz Station, then shut and seal every door, allowing them to be opened only from your security station.
Speaking of which, Wedge said, is there an auxiliary security station? Somewhere that can override security controls from the bridge and the main security office?
Yes, sir.
Lieutenant Yorvin's attention flickered back and forth between the two pilots, and the comprehension dawning on her face suggested that she was beginning to understand what she would and would not be able to do in this situation.
But it's easier to...
Do it from there, Tycho said. And send us your captain. What's his name?
Tawaller, Wedge supplied. Also, no body, no weapon, no scorch mark, no splash of spilled calf is to be touched.
Don't touch the security recordings without our say-so, Tycho added. Just stand by in the security station and be prepared to open doors or provide information whenever I call for it, or General Antilles, or Admiral Pelion, or Master Skywalker, or anyone we designate.
Lieutenant Yorvin tried one last time.
But this isn't the way things are done.
Wedge turned back toward Pelion.
Admiral, if these people don't do exactly as we say, is Toriaz Station going to be paid for rental of this habitat?
No, it's not.
Pelion, once again in full-dress uniform, settled back in an overstuffed chair. If they continue to obstruct this investigation, are they going to be sued? Tycho asked. Pelion nodded, looking like a kindly old grandfather reluctant to give bad news.
And they'll lose. Oh, how they'll lose.
Wedge looked back at the officer.
Dismissed, he said.
She left. More precisely, she fled, nearly banging her nose on the lounge door as it slid out of her way almost too slowly.
Since there's only one party here that is plausibly neutral, Wedge said, I propose we hand coordination of this situation over to Master Skywalker and his Jedi.
I agree, Pelion said, which is not to say that I only want Jedi looking into it.
Don't worry, Luke said. I'll be happy to draw on everyone's strengths. He frowned. Allow me the first question here, Admiral. Do you routinely have a double along with you? The old officer shook his head.
But then, I don't routinely go on diplomatic missions. The double, and swapping out of the bedchambers we'd been assigned for others that were supposed to be empty, were notions of General Selchew's, and they saved my life.
Actually, Tycho corrected, it's something Wedge and I settled on together. Pelion stage whispered,
This treasonous collaboration has got to stop.
His expression suggested he didn't mean it. Luke turned to Wedge. But Saxon wasn't protected by the same measures. Wedge nodded.
I recommended they be implemented, but remember, I wasn't in charge of the Prime Minister's security, the way Tycho is in charge of the Admiral's. I was overruled by her security chief, fellow named Tomek. He's among the dead.
Han frowned.
Not Harval, Tomek.
Wedge nodded again.
A member of Thrakken Sal Solo's political machine, Han continued. What's someone like that doing in charge of security for a political rival? Wedge offered up a humorless smile. In his secondary capacity as Minister of War, Sal Solo was able to insist that Saxon security be augmented by Tomic's crew. Tomic's crew took over.
Who's going to take over as Five-World Prime Minister? Luke asked. Saxon's deputy?
Wedge nodded. Fellow named Denjax Tepler. Once married to Saxon, in fact. They parted, but remained friendly. He'll hold the post until they can arrange a new election. Months, perhaps.
Han snorted. You mean until he gets killed, too?
Luke, seated, finished dressing. He flexed his toes in his boots, and then zipped the boots up along the side. Now he was clad head to toe in black. Somber dress for a somber occasion, and also vaguely menacing dress in a time when he needed politicians and bureaucrats to listen to him very carefully. All right, he said, if I'm in charge of this investigation, a circumstance that can only last until the GA and Corellian delegations receive orders from their respective governments, then I'm going to have to act fast. He rose. Tycho, Wedge, and the Jedi will spread out to investigate. Admiral, I'd like to ask you to stay here. Coordinate data as we obtain it.
Han.
He frowned, obviously at a loss to make use of Han's skills in this situation. Leia spoke up.
Han can provide security here, and maybe let the Admiral teach him a thing or two about Sabacc.
Teach me, Han repeated.
Two kindly old Corellians,
Leia continued, her expression innocent,
having a harmless game of cards.
Pelion fixed Han with a disbelieving stare.
Your lady really does like the sight of blood, doesn't she?
Han gestured toward the old naval officer, a motion that somehow said, it's settled. Luke took one last quick look around. His attention fell on his son. Ben was paler than usual and unnaturally quiet. Luke saw Mara reach for the boy, probably to give his brow or chin an affectionate stroke, but Ben drew back without looking at her. Luke didn't know whether the boy was shunning contact or simply didn't want to seem to be a coddled child in front of the other Jedi, but he felt a faint pang of hurt from Mara, a pang she quickly, ruthlessly clamped down on. He felt for her, but had no time to talk to her, to talk to Ben. He rose.
Let's go, he said.
Zek, beside the door, hit the control panel and it slid open for Luke. His cloak streaming, his fellow Jedi trailing behind him, Luke swept out into the hall and prepared himself for what he knew was going to be a long night of investigating, negotiating, and theorizing.
Sorry, have I interrupted a veterans parade?
Jaina asked. Wedge, in anonymous gray civilian clothes, and Tycho, still in his dress uniform, were walking side by side down an outer rim corridor. Wedge glanced back at Jaina and Zek. Then he and Tycho exchanged a look.
Jedi are quiet, Tycho said. They sneak up on you even when they're supposed to be your friends.
Wedge grinned.
Maybe you're just losing your hearing.
I was deafened by the sound of your joints creaking.
That could be it.
Wedge returned his attention to the datapad in his hands. It was open, and its small screen displayed a map of this section of Narsak habitat. The map background was black. The partitions and bulkheads were narrow yellow lines, and a dotted red line stretched from behind their current position to a point some meters ahead.
Tell her that I'm not sure I should be talking to a traitor.
General Antilles says,
Traitor?
Jaina stopped, aghast.
Wait a minute.
I'm half Corellian by birth, sure, but I wasn't raised as a citizen. And as Jedi, we're supposed to put the interest of the greater good ahead of planetary concerns.
Not what I meant, Wedge said, unruffled.
Tycho nodded. She's young. She jumps to conclusions.
Wedge adjusted the data pad so that the map scrolled ahead. It now showed the red dotted line terminating at an airlock.
She also talks too much.
She has to. The boy who follows her everywhere doesn't say anything.
Jaina glanced back and up at Zek. He nodded, admission that the point was well made.
No, Wedge said. What I mean is that anyone as good as you are in a snub fighter, but who gives up the flying life to run around in robes and swing an impractical energy sword, has committed treason to her natural aptitudes.
I still fly, Jaina said. And I still fly X-wings. And you're avoiding the subject.
Wedge nodded.
All right. No more avoidance.
He drew a deep breath, then let it out in a guilty sigh.
This is not a veterans' parade.
Well done, Tycho said. Confession does cleanse the spirit, doesn't it?
It does, Wedge admitted.
Jaina held up her hands, fingers curled, as if on the verge of reaching for Wedge's neck.
So what have you found?
Tycho said, As you know, the head security officer for the habitat is missing.
We know,
Jaina said ruefully.
That's what Zek and I have been doing, looking for him. We looked at the holocam recordings,
which don't exist for Calabarth Way for the time period of the attack, Tycho said.
Correct. We also went through his quarters, tried to get a sense of him.
She frowned. What is it? Tycho asked. Jaina smiled.
Oh, at last you're curious. At last I have something you want to know.
Tycho rolled his eyes. Better tell her, Wedge. She's going to get difficult. Wedge came to a stop so suddenly that Jaina almost bumped into him. They were in front of an airlock. Wedge's datapad indicated that they were at the terminus of the red dotted line. He snapped the device shut.
In the wake of the attack, Tycho and I did the first, most obvious thing.
You asked for brandy? Zek asked.
The tree speaks at last. Tycho shook his head. No, we asked for those self-same holocam recordings that don't exist.
So you got nothing, Jaina said.
From a pocket, Wedge pulled a cable. One end went into a jack in the datapad. The other was a standard round wall plug, which he fit into the jack beneath the airlock's control panel.
Running diagnostics, he said. Seems to be pressurized. No unusual pulses through the internal sensors. No, Jaina. We asked whether Toriaz Station is the sort of place where the engineering department logs all door openings and closings. You know, to measure wear patterns, predict replacement needs, that sort of thing.
That would never have occurred to me,
Jaina admitted. Wedge smiled.
Me either. Something my wife taught me. Or rather taught my younger daughter while I eavesdropped. I have one daughter going into my line of work, one going into my wife's. Genetically and culturally speaking, isn't that perfect?
Perfect, Jaina said, her tone flat. So, the door openings?
Wedge rapped the airlock door.
This was open shortly before the attack, for about a minute at a time, when there is no listing of a ship being docked outside. And note that we're on the opposite side of the habitat from its outer rim, meaning that this airlock is out of direct sight of the frigate Firethorn. It's the most inconvenient airlock on the habitat, with the most inconvenient approach, suited only to shuttles and smaller craft. Anyway, a minute later, it went through a depressurization cycle. Outer door opened and closed,
and then repressurized.
So someone arrived here by shuttle and left here by shuttle,
Jaina said.
Tycho shook his head.
That doesn't make sense. You bring in a crew of assassins. You open the airlock to let them in. You close it, cycle it, reopen it. Why? If you're just going to leave, why not leave it open for the 60 or 90 seconds until you leave?
Meaning, Wedge said, ultimately what we have is a mystery.
Add to it the fact that the security door on the tube to the main station opened a couple of minutes later. So a shuttle left here, and then something cycled through the airlock, to throw out some evidence maybe, and then someone left the habitat on foot.
His datapad chimed, and he opened it up to glance at the screen.
Looks all clear, he said. Risk it.
Tycho said, put the children up front. Wedge grinned and typed a series of numbers and letters into the pad. The airlock door hissed and slid open. From another pocket, he pulled a pair of thin gloves and donned them. He began prodding at the corners of access panels, running fingers across the tops of glowing warning signs, peering into every crack and cranny in the airlock.
Wish Yella were here, he said.
Or Winter, Tycho added.
Both our wives are ex-intelligence, Wedge said, his comment directed at Zek. Tycho's wife used to babysit Jaina, in fact. Whatever we've learned, we've picked up mostly through osmosis.
Normally we just shoot things, Tycho added.
We keep trying to retire, Wedge said. Give up this life of shooting things.
Tycho nodded. We're really men of peace at heart. Wedge stepped out from the airlock and shrugged.
Nothing.
Jaina held out her hand.
Give it over.
Wedge looked surprised.
What?
I saw you palm something when you were bent over looking at the floor. Hand it over.
Wedge shook his head.
Our lead. Our investigation. You and your pole-like shadow can tag along if you want.
Trade,
Zek said. Wedge shot him a curious look.
What?
Trade. I give you my lead, the one I found on my own. You didn't tell me you found a lead,
Jaina muttered. Zek ignored her.
You give Jaina your lead. And even trade.
Wedge glanced at Tycho.
What do you think?
Tycho shook his head. Jedi bluff. Zek smiled.
To sweeten the deal, the lead I picked up, if you take it, means you'll have to commandeer a shuttle or a rescue craft and go flying around outside.
Wedge sighed.
It's always the quiet ones. All right, Master Motivator, you have a deal.
From a side pocket, he removed a clean orange rag that appeared to be wrapped around something. He held it above Jaina's hand, but did not release it.
Your clue?
We were looking for T'Waller, too, as Jaina said. His comlink reads as being off base, Zek said. So I dismissed it for a while. But then I remembered. Off-base, as a comm term, is normally used on ground-side bases. We use the same terms in the Order, probably because Master Skywalker is ex-military. Means that the wearer is not on base, but his comlink is still returning a signal. Right?
Right, Wedge said.
Oh.
Jaina caught it just as fast.
So our suspect's comlink is still returning a signal from nearby. But we've all been assuming it meant that he'd flown off to some planet somewhere. Give it.
She wiggled her fingers. Wedge dropped the rag into her hand. The object within it had a little weight to it, perhaps half a kilogram. Jaina turned the rag over and unfolded it, revealing what lay within.
Huh,
she said.